is always a pleasure to welcome a new American. As a government teacher and as an immigration official, I take double pleasure in this. I also know that the test for this is very difficult, and I understand you helped him study.
His wife did.
Okay. So I'm sued. How many branches of government are there? What are they?
Executive and judicial.
Correct. Executive and judicial. So, how many people in the Senate? How many senators? You can ask a friend.
Throw a lifeline.
Pick a number between 99 and 101.
Two first names.
I just had to have a little bit of fun, but it's a very serious thing to become an American, and we're very proud that you were able to accomplish that. You're welcome.
Good evening. My name's Travis Mead. I'm a captain with Capital City Fire Rescue. I've had the pleasure of being Masood's captain for the last year, going on a year and a half. Prior to that, the first time I met Masood was about 5 years ago, and I was working on shift out at Station 3. Masood had come down to the station with his friend to kind of check out the place. His friend was a volunteer at the time. And Masood was, it was 2012, you were new to Juneau by about a month. And he had only been in the country about a year. He had been living in Texas, working at Walmart, attending a English as a second language class, practicing his English at Walmart. So he shows up at the station, and I'm in the ARF rotation, so I'm there by myself while everybody else goes out on a call. And Masood's left behind with me as I'm working, changing a light bulb. And Masood is peppering me with these little questions on how to become a volunteer and how to become a firefighter. And he says, do you think that something, I could do something like this? And of course I said, well, of course, with enough hard work, you can do anything you want. Inside, I'm thinking, oh, my goodness, you know, good luck with that. But we'll see. I'm not going to tell you no. Of course not, you know. And so about 8 months later, I see him. He shows up at a drill, and he's decided he wants to be a volunteer. And I thought, great, you know, this is going to take a lot of work, but I'm glad to see him here. And since then, he's went on to attend a Firefighter 1 Academy. At the same time, he enrolled in an EMT class. He passed both of those classes at the same time in the top of his class. He went on to get hired with the department and successfully passed his probation, which is a stressful year. And on April 21st, he went up and became a U.S. citizen in Anchorage. And unfortunately, it's only in Anchorage when they do the ceremony. So none of this was able to happen. So I appreciate being able to have a ceremony here, and we appreciate that you've come to Juneau and chose the fire department to make it your career. Thank you.
Well, good afternoon. First of all, thanks to the Juneau Assembly members, Honorable. Thanks you for having me here tonight. I probably don't know adequate words to express my feelings right now, but I think who I am and what I did doesn't deserve this much attention. personally, but the event is great because of this country and the idea of American dream that if you can, if you want something and you're willing to work for hard for it, you can hope that it's going to happen and come true. This is the first time after 5-6 years that I have my family in a big event of my life. It is really big for me. We were separate for a few years. And also, I want to each and every one of my fire department family, brothers and sisters, that joining the fire department, give me a career and give me a second family. And that is, as I said, I can't express it in the words. So thank you.
Could we have your mother and your sister come up? And I'm not going to ask any questions. Maybe I'll ask you who the mayor is. And how about your second family? Ladies.
All y'all.
All of you.
Fill the well.
And we hope there's not a fire going on someplace. Okay, let's crowd in so we can get a picture. Crowd in, that means you got to come this way and this way. Come on, crowd in, come on, come on, come on. Don't make me arrange this picture. Move in, move in, move in, come on, move in.
Pretend you like each
clump
other.
Clump up, clump up.
Hey, pretend you like each other, come on.
All right, Amy, can you get a picture? Yes. All right. Again, congratulations. Welcome from your family in Juneau.
Donate. City government's nonpartisan. Hey, come on now.
Hey, Travis. Your back looks good.
Nice job.
Hi, Scott. Girls are getting big. Hi. Hey, how are you? So this is the youngest one that I haven't met yet. I've only seen you on Facebook. Congratulations. She doesn't have to say. Oh, she wants to flirt with Norton. He's more fun. Yeah, she's, girl's got her priorities straight. Yeah. Yeah. We have a baby in the office again. I'm loving it. Yeah, he's not even 5 months old yet, and he's a big kid.
Thank you.
But you know me, I just like babies.
Yes, indeed. Thank you.
It's my nice to meet you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Hey.
Congratulations.
All right, we'll go back to our regular agenda.
Now we have some air in here.
Soon. Miss Becker. Approval of the minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. There was very few, very non-substantive corrections that I've already given to Ms. Seeker. I move that the June 5th, 2017 regular assembly meeting minutes be approved. And the June 7, 2017 Special Assembly meeting be approved. And ask for unanimous consent.
Seeing no objection, they are approved. Manager's request for agenda changes.
No changes, thank you.
public participation on agenda items. We have several people signed up to speak tonight. We will go back to 2 minutes and maybe cut Deborah just a little bit of slack, but we'll do the 2 minutes. I will remind people that it is a uniform time limit. We'll ask you to start by stating your name and your place of residency. Audience members, we'd ask that you would respect a speaker's right to express their concerns and observations and refrain from cheering, jeering, or any other show of support or non-support. That's very important for the person talking. So the public participation is limited to approximately 20 minutes with 2 minutes each. And our first speaker is William Quayle.
William Quayle, 415 Willoughby, number 305. This is the poster that goes to my pedicab that will be on it when I finally have my certificate. It was not put on it right now. But I'm looking, it's the $1,500 I have to save for. In the meantime, I have to painstakingly refuse rides to people that really do need it, and it reflects on the city. Also, it says down there, weather. That means I do it in the winter. And I'm looking forward to doing this in the winter, but I need to be able to work at night. And in Juneau, it gets dark really early. And the reason I got from both one of the managers is it's too dangerous to do it. And that's really out the window, because I've sent you pictures of my pedicab. It's more than enough lighting for a vehicle on that. In the winter, I've had times where it's really icy and that, and it's safer for me to ride my pedicab than it is to walk. And I've had times where during the New Year's, I was waiting for a ride, and I got four offers for rides to take them a couple blocks because they're in high heels, and I had to turn them down because it was at night and I didn't have my certificate. I would like to get it so, and finally, in October, I don't have to turn down any rights. None. Zip. I've had enough of this. I mean, it's really a pain, and I appreciate you being able to. And nobody wants to do anything about it. I appreciate that. I mean, I keep on bringing it up, keep on bringing it up. I do it for a reason. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Quayle. Deborah Craig? And I'm granting a little bit of a leeway because I realize that you're speaking for a number of people.
Thank you. My name is Deborah Craig, 3251 Noel Avenue. I love history, Mr. Mayor, so I'm going to bore you a little bit tonight with a little bit of history about Flint, Michigan. In 2013, Flint, Michigan's water supply fund was $9 million in the red, and to cut costs, the city council voted to switch the city's water supply to a less expensive option, resulting in the use of Flint River water. As early as the 70s, the Flint River was known to contain multiple toxic substances, and the already tainted water was not treated with anti-corrosives, so lead from the old pipeline began to leach into the city's water, and the disaster unfolded. In 2015, the following occurred. A group of concerned citizens sued the city since the city seemed incapable of protecting the citizens of Flint. The city attorney dismissed the suit. The ACLU warned citizens of the dangers after an investigation. The city's response was that the mayor drank a cup of water on TV to assure citizens that the water was just fine. A Virginia Tech research team tested the water and found that 40% of the homes had elevated levels of lead. The Hurley Medical Center, led by a pediatrician, released a study revealing that the number of children with elevated lead levels in the blood had doubled since the water source had been changed. In November, city residents filed a federal class action suit claiming 14 city and state officials, including the governor, had knowingly exposed the city to toxic water. Criminal charges were ultimately filed against several people involved in the flawed decision-making and cover-ups. My point, public officials, first and foremost, must prioritize the health, safety, and welfare of the community. The Flint citizens and scientists and pediatricians and university professors and scientists and lawyers who tried to inform Flint officials that they were failing the prime directive were not a mob. They were not asking the city to cave to mob rule. They were a minority who had the time, education, and expertise to represent the majority's interest since the city's officials chose not to do so. On June 12th, Committee of the Whole, Ms. White claimed the Assembly doesn't skirt the issues or take the easy way out. I agree with you, Ms. White. The Assembly needs a backbone. Don't cave to a few people who put personal economic gain over public safety. Don't skirt the issues of public concern. Don't take the easy way out. Do the heavy lifting required to thoroughly review the impact of changes to the mining ordinance as a Committee of the Whole. You need to know the details if you're going to vote for or against it. We're holding you responsible for our safety, health, and well-being. Thank you.
Thank you. Elaine Schroeder.
I'm Elaine Schroeder, and I live at 1706 Willow Drive in Juneau. I would like to request that Mayor Kelsch, with the support of the Assembly, join the 331 other American mayors representing 65 million Americans who have signed a statement committed to adopt, honor, and uphold the climate goals of the Paris Agreement. This is a bipartisan effort with over a third of those signing are Republican mayors. Cities such as Dallas, Houston, San Antonio, and New Orleans, all in oil-producing states, have also signed. 9 of the 10 largest U.S. cities have signed on. Anchorage is on board, and the number of mayors signing is growing rapidly. The climate mayor's statement includes the following. We will continue to lead. We are increasing investments in renewable energy and energy efficiency. We will increase our efforts to cut greenhouse gas emissions and create a clean energy economy. The world cannot wait, and neither will we. I believe the city should join with the Central Council, Tlingit N'haida, that recently signed with other Native nations a statement saying that they will continue to uphold and support the Paris Climate Accord. Their declaration stated the following. The failure of the U.S. to confront the urgent and existential threat of climate change makes it a moral and practical necessity for tribal, state, and local governments to fill the leadership. We can no longer allow a failed system to continue to destroy the planet, they wrote. As Pope Francis said, the climate is a common good belonging to all and meant for all. The moral imperative of acting on climate change is indisputable. The decisions we make now will decide if we will or will not redeem a just and thriving planet. And the place to do this is to start by Juneau signing on to the Mayor's Climate Agreement. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Schroeder. Dick Farno.
My name is Dick Farnell. I live at 800 F Street. I'm speaking as a member of the 350 Juneau group to address the issue of how pulling out of the Paris Climate Accord weakens our international relationships. How many countries signed the Paris Climate Accord in 2015? I lost track when I tried to add them up, so I just have to remember that there's only two countries who did not sign. Nicaragua, who thought it was not stringent enough, and Syria, who happens to be distracted with other issues. Even North Korea signed the accord. U.S. cooperation with the accord is vital to convincing other countries to make a serious effort to meet their targets. Pulling out sends a signal that U.S. considers its obligations optional. This isn't the way we have been working. The Paris Accord is just one of a number of interconnected agreements that sustain America's dominant global position in the world. Let's take a look at a parallel sector like the economy. The U.S. is the only country to have veto power over major decisions at the IMF and World Bank, giving it tremendous power over global cash flows. But other countries seem fine with this. They treat the IMF, World Bank, and World Trade Organization as basic arbiters of the global economic functions. Why? Because the rules these organizations have bind the U.S. to accept these agencies' decisions as well. These rules constrain America enough and benefit all the weaker countries enough that everyone is willing to accept these basic conditions. This helps preserve America's dominant place in the global hierarchy. This makes the leading state's power more acceptable to other states, creating incentives for support rather than opposition. Leaving the Paris Accord undermines faith in this system. So, supporting the accord is not just about joining in response to climate change. It's larger than that. It's about maintaining the cohesiveness that holds the world together.
Thank you. Doug Woodby.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. My name is Doug Woodby, and I live at 3240 Noel Avenue here in Juneau. I'm here tonight to express my concern for Juneau's economic future. Specifically, I'm concerned about the economic impacts of global warming on our city and our state, and I'm now even more concerned since our federal government has pulled out of the Paris Climate Accord. The projected economic impacts of ignoring climate change are substantial and will have direct and lasting effects on our families and our children if we just stand by and watch. Allow me to introduce or to provide you a few examples of the impacts. Recent research published by the National Academy of Sciences predicts that there will be billions of dollars in damages to infrastructure in Alaska because of global warming. And this is based on predictions of impacts due to increased rainfall and flooding, melting permafrost, and coastal erosion. The good news is that significant amounts of this damage, measured in billions of dollars, can be averted if we reduce our carbon footprint. And warming's not the only problem. As you're probably aware, ocean acidification is an unfortunate byproduct of all the excess CO2 that we've pumped into the atmosphere. And the trend of this increasing acidity is sure to continue, and that spells trouble for our fisheries, particularly our shellfish fisheries and possibly for our finfish fisheries. As a city that does produce seafood and has significant economic dependence on seafood, I think this is something we should be aware of. Because of these economic concerns, I encourage you, Mayor Kelch, and the Assembly to join the Climate Mayors Network to support the goals of the Paris Climate Accord to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Thank you for the opportunity to express my concern.
Thank you. Jennifer Johnson.
My name is Jennifer Johnson. I live at 3056 Street in Juneau. Thank you for this opportunity to talk to you. I'm here to encourage Mayor Kolsch to join the Climate Mayors Network because it's important to our children's future. Children eat, drink, and breathe more for their size than adults, and their body systems are still developing. Because of this, they're more vulnerable to food and water shortages, increased food prices, extreme heat, weather disasters, and decreased air quality. Doing what we can now will ensure our children have a safer and healthier future. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. Is it Mike Tobin?
Good Thank you, Mr. Mayor. My name is Mike Tobin. I live at 6105 Thane Road in Juneau. I'm a retired emergency doctor, and I would like to say a few words about science and encourage Major Kelch to join the Mayor's Climate Network. Juneau is a science town. Many people living here make their living as scientists, and some of them, biologists, glaciologists, meteorologists, and oceanographers, have contributed to the scientific consensus that climate change is real and driven primarily by human production of greenhouse gases. Juneau is also a fishing town. Since 1949, air temperature in this area has increased by 3 degrees. Streams have warmed also, affecting salmon smolt survival in many systems, causing massive die-offs in systems on Prince of Wales. Warmer ocean temperatures have also reduced productivity of salmon prey species on the open ocean, decreasing adult return and spawning of adult salmon. As mentioned, increasing carbon dioxide in the atmosphere also gets into the water, increasing the acidity, and causes many species of shellfish and crabs to not be able to make shells. According to the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute, some areas of Alaskan coastal waters will be unable to support shellfish in as little as 10 years. Lastly, we are an Alaskan town, part of a region warming much faster than the rest of the country. Melting permafrost is causing damage to roads and structures. Huge forest fires are destroying large tracts of boreal forest. Melting sea ice has exposed coastal towns in western Alaska to rapid erosion. 31 Alaska villages are in, quote, imminent threat of destruction from erosion and flooding, according to the Arctic Institute. Mr. Mayor, please consider supporting this agreement and the Mayor's Climate Network. The science is abundant and clear, and this is an opportunity to lead. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tobin. Andrew Heiss.
My name is Andrew Heist. I live at 712 Basin Road. I'm here tonight to speak about the sales agreement that the city manager is slated to sign with Eagle Rock Ventures tomorrow regarding the 2nd and Franklin lot. I have concerns over the design of the latest proposed design that that has been floated. Initially, when this question was before the assembly about 6 months ago, the design for the proposed dwelling structure talked about somewhere between 18 and 30 apartment units on this lot, and there were concerns about parking, and I think those concerns are still here. The most recent design shows 130 single occupant residences with shared kitchens on each floor. Basically, a high-density boarding house right in the core downtown business district. I have concerns over the people, or basically that is the best use of that space. And I would ask that the city manager delay signing that agreement until there's more information about the project that's going to be put forth there. I think that is something that the city manager can do, and I would ask that he exercise his ability to extend the signing on that property until there's more information available. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Waller?
Hi, my name is Joni Waller. I live at 315 3rd Street, and I'm here to talk about the sale of the Franklin Street, 2nd and Franklin Street parking lot. Tomorrow is the 180th day after the ordinance came final, and it's supposed to be signed. The city gave the manager the ability to negotiate the sales agreement, and they came up with 5 years to submit a building permit. And approve financing, and I think 5 years is way too long. I think that the people that are living here don't really want to be able to, want to have to wait that long to find out what's really going to happen. 18 months might work a little better for them to figure out what they're doing. So Rory Watt, the city manager, told us he can extend the closing date, so I'm asking that you direct him to extend that closing date so there can be a little more discussion about it and for you to be able to actually look at what has been submitted in a pre-application conference, which shows we've been asking for them to tell us what they're going to build, and what we're looking at now is in the mixed-use zone. They're completely maxing out and taking advantage of every leniency that's allowed in the mixed-use zone. They're looking at max height, max density, zero setbacks, zero coverage, no parking, and they even asked for an egress waiver. I sent you all a letter explaining in detail about it. So this building is three times the amount of units that we originally were, everybody was thinking in the room when this ordinance was decided on. So just because they can doesn't mean they should expand on that. We, the property taxpaying residents, are an integral part of the mixed-use zone. We have to live with the results of this overly dense urban experiment, as well as the parking nightmare that it's going to create with 130 units. And we ask you not to sign that and close it tomorrow, please.
Thank you. Sandy Harris.
Thank you. I also, my name is Sandy Harris, and I live at 424 4th Street in downtown Juneau. I also am here to speak about the lot sale at 2nd and Franklin. I'm here to express concerns about the proposed 130-unit single-room occupancy residence with shared kitchen facilities and limited parking. First, I think it's a mistake to assume that few residents of this building would have vehicles and that they would thus not use very many parking spaces. Second, having lived near the Bergman for over 20 years, I have seen how difficult it is to manage a building with many residents packed into small spaces. For the last several years, the police and or ambulance were at the Bergman nearly every day dealing with problems occurring on the premises. Having residents in this new building share kitchens only increases the potential for interpersonal conflicts, which inevitably arise when people are crowded. I do support low-income housing in Juneau, even in my neighborhood. However, I don't see this proposal as a good option, and I would also ask that the signing be postponed. Thank you for allowing me to speak.
Thank you. Dennis Harris.
Good evening. My name is Dennis Harris. I'm proud to be the third generation in my family to live at 544 West 12th Street. And I wanted to speak to you about a little problem that's arisen with transportation network companies. I'll be right out front. I am a limousine permit holder from the city and borough of Juneau. I heard today that apparently Uber has decided that they do not want to collect sales tax on behalf of their drivers, unlike myself and the taxi companies here in Juneau and the other limousine company. And I want to remind you that the bill that passed has an option for us. You can pass an ordinance to be adopted by the voters at the next regular election to keep transportation network companies and their abusive drivers and their abuse of the public process out of Juneau. All you have to do is pass the ordinance in time for it to be scheduled for the next regular election. And I think you should do that. And I'll add my voice to these others here. We don't need any instant Bergmans. We already had one, and we are going to have trouble getting rid of it. And we don't need an instant Bergman being built with inside rooms that don't have windows and shared kitchen facilities. That's not the kind of housing we need in this community. Two, I hope, Mr. Mayor, that you will join, along with many of the other members of the National Conference of Mayors, in the Climate Accord. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Harris. Marlene Johnson.
Thank you for allowing me to be here tonight and to speak with you. My name is Marlene Johnson. I live at 9505 Antler Way here in Juneau. I am here tonight representing my sister Frida Borchick's estate. Frida died in October 21, 2015. Frida owns two condos in Aurora Arms, which is on 1890 Glacier Highway. The Aurora Arms was built in 1972. In 1987, the City of Juneau's Zoning Commission changed the zoning of the housing in that area, and it is single family only. They did not grandfather Aurora Arms in, nor did they allow them a variance. I am trying to settle her estate. I cannot sell those unless somebody has cash and the insurance doesn't care about insurance. The real estate companies and the insurance companies will not finance a buyer because they cannot rebuild. If they should burn, they cannot rebuild. I would ask the City of Juneau and their zoning to either give a grandfather to the Aurora Arms, the 20 people that own condos there, or give them a variance so that they, the real estate companies, can finance the purchases. I have buyers for both, but they both need financing. And we can't settle that estate until that is done. So I ask that you look at this soon and seriously, because Frida had a lot of property in Juneau and paid a lot of taxes to Juneau, and we've been able to take care of all of them except these at Aurora Arms. So I thank you for hearing me, and I hope you can do something to help this situation. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. That concludes this portion of public participation and non-agenda items. And we will go to the consent agenda. Is there any public request for consent agenda changes other than ordinances? Is there any assembly request for consent agenda changes? Assembly action, Ms. Becker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move that we adopt the consent agenda items as written and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there any objection? Seeing none, that takes us to public hearings. Ordinance 2017-11, Madam Clerk.
This is an ordinance amending the land use code relating to wireless communication facility setback requirements.
Mr. Manager.
This ordinance would amend the section addressing setback requirements for wireless communication facilities in CBJ 4965-930 by deleting the illustrative example provided. The Community Development Department determined the given example is inaccurate and confusing and recommends its deletion. The Planning Commission considered the draft ordinance at its regular meeting on May 23, 2017, and approved a motion forwarding it to the full Assembly for its consideration. The Lands Committee considered the ordinance at its meeting on June 12, 2017, and recommended forwarding it to the Assembly for public hearing. I recommend you adopt this ordinance.
Is there anyone here that wishes to testify? Seeing none, I will bring it back to the Assembly. Mr. Gregory.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move that the Assembly adopt Ordinance 2017-11 and ask for unanimous consent.
Seeing no objection, the motion carried. Ordinance 2017-13, Madam Clerk.
An ordinance amending the Waters and Harbors Code relating to coordination of the Docks and Harbors Board.
Mr. Manager.
This ordinance amends the code provision outlining how the Docks and Harbors Board coordinates with the Assembly and Manager by eliminating the requirement that the Board submit, quote, all security plans to the Manager for review, unquote, prior to the plan being submitted to the Coast Guard. The only security plan submitted to the Coast Guard is the Facility Security Plan. Submittal of the Facility Security Plan rests solely with the Facility Security Officer. The Harbor Master is the Facility Security Officer for the City and Borough of Juneau. Because the plan contains sensitive security information as defined by federal law, its disclosure is limited to those who are need to know. Because the Board is not need to know with respect to the plan, and as it does not oversee the submittal of the plan to the Coast Guard, that code requirement should be deleted. To the extent the plan implicates the use of any department under the authority of the city manager, including fire or police, the facility security officer will continue to coordinate with the manager. I recommend you adopt this ordinance.
Is there anyone in the public that wishes to testify? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the Assembly. Ms. Weldon?
I move the Assembly adopt Ordinance 2017-13 and ask for unanimous consent.
Seeing no objection, the motion carried. Ordinance 2017-16. Madam Clerk.
An ordinance amending the Land Use Code relating to alternative development overlay districts.
Mr. Manager.
This ordinance would amend Title 49 to create temporary zoning overlay districts for the downtown Juneau and Douglas neighborhoods. Current zoning does not reflect the character of these historic neighborhoods, nor does it support the community's vision for them as walkable, compact neighborhoods, as described in the 2013 Comprehensive Plan. The ordinance would allow the Planning Commission flexibility in addressing setbacks, lot coverage, and vegetative coverage for residential buildings within the overlay boundaries. It does not exempt a developer from obtaining all other necessary permits or from meeting other requirements of Title 49. The ordinance includes a sunset clause as the overlay districts are intended to be a temporary measure providing needed flexibility in the code while allowing CDD time to draft new zoning standards that better fit the individual neighborhoods and preserve their historic character. The recommended sunset dates are 24 months for Juneau and 36 months for Douglas. On May 23, 2017, the Planning Commission approved the forwarding of the ordinance to the Assembly for its consideration. The Committee of the Whole considered this ordinance at its June 12, 2017 meeting and approved forwarding it to the full Assembly for public hearing. I recommend you adopt this ordinance.
Is there anyone from the public that wishes to testify? Come forward. State your name and address.
Good evening. My name is Greg Cheney, and I live at 715 6th Street in Juneau, downtown. I work as a lands manager for the city. Some of you might recognize me, but I am speaking as a private citizen tonight, and I will be brief. I live in Star Hill, which is within this area, and I am strongly supportive of this overlay district concept. This is my lot, as you can see. Thank you. Most of my house does not conform to the setback. The dotted line is the D5 setback, but you will notice, even more extreme, all of my neighbors are way under their setbacks. So this was a neighborhood that was built over 100 years ago. My house was built in 1902, and if you go through this, none of the houses in this neighborhood comply with D5 setbacks. And that's fascinating because this area was zoned D5, I think, in 1986. There was very little public comment. It was a complete rezone of the entire community. So we are a single-family residential neighborhood, but we have these setbacks that don't reflect the neighborhood or the historic character of the neighborhood. But you would know that we do not mind that. We just had a 100-year neighborhood party that shut down the streets. We had a big dance in the streets. And I'm not kidding. It's really supportive. So I think our setbacks are great. The residential, I mean, this ordinance that you're looking at gives a provision that allows you to average the setbacks of 100 of the residential units within 150-foot radius of the house. So I did that for my place. It's actually quite a project to do this. And what you notice is that the, you know, I'm not sure if this is exactly right, but it's about 9 feet is an average rear yard setback. I'm talking about rear yard setbacks here. But if you were to apply for a project, which I think I might do, notice that's not going to help any of these people. It's not going to help, and these people don't need it. Okay, am I 2 minutes? I'll try to be brief.
Okay.
So what I'm saying is this really, it sounds great, doesn't help that much. So this is my house. This little, the red rectangle is what I might want for my deck. 1.6 foot is the existing rear yard setback. The required setback is 20 feet. If you do the average, it kind of works. It'll work. I'm supportive of the ordinance. But when I read the other part of the ordinance, it says a footprint of the existing residential building could be considered part of the setback. Now, when I interpreted that, I thought it meant that each building creates its own setback. So this would be 1.6 feet in this case. But then other people have said different things. So it's a little ambiguous, and it wasn't discussed at the Planning Commission. So I was hoping that with legislative intent is an important part of this. I'm not asking for any change to the ordinance. Just does this mean you can only rebuild within this existing footprint of the building? It doesn't really do much if that's all it means. Or does it mean that the setback is determined by the building? Because if you do that, then every single person along this row will know what their setbacks are because it'll be determined by their building. Thank you. I'd be happy to answer any questions if you have any. Sorry for going over.
Thank you.
Ms. White, do you have a clarification question?
Well, not necessarily for Mr. Cheney, but I noticed we have a few Planning Commission members. Perhaps they could address that issue.
Let's finish up with public testimony, okay, and then we can come back to that. But thank you, Mr. Cheney.
Thank you very much.
Is there anyone else from the public that wishes to testify?
Hi. My name is Steve Sankson, and I've been a resident of Juneau for many years. I read this, and I was very interested in it because I know that there's a lot of ways that the Juneau housing market is stuck, and there's been a lot of study on that in recent years. But I'd like to also suggest that you include the word density in a list of available topics that can come up under this alternative planning proposal. And I know that's a sensitive issue, but I believe the dialogue on specific projects needs to expose density issues in context. And this alternative system is appropriate to reveal how serious density has clogged our system in the downtown areas. Our zoning rule problems have prevented owners from replacing or improving existing multifamily properties and prevent new construction projects from even starting with any more than two units. As I said, my name is Steve Sankson. I've been a resident of Juneau for 37 years, and during much of that time, I was a design, build, general contractor and developer. I built over 60 buildings and assisted others in developing an additional 60-plus buildings. Many of these units were downtown, but after the zoning change in 84 and 86, most new projects ground to a halt. New multifamily construction virtually ceased at that time. Downtown density zoning was pegged at number of units per acre, and there are no acres in downtown Juneau. If you look at the map, you'll see that there are 50 by 100-foot lots. Even with D18 zoning that tries to impose 18 units per acre, only two units are permitted on any one individual lot. Property owners have no recourse due process when it comes to zoning issues. Zoning cannot be decided by variance application. All multifamily downtown housing is stuck except for the mixed-use area. So I think we really have to deal with density. Since the 1980s, many housing units, 300 housing units, have been demolished in downtown Juneau and have not been replaced. The downtown housing situation has worsened since that time, and it's been allowed to happen. zoning rules do not even allow you to apply for adding additional units. Current density does not allow replacement housing and doesn't allow feasible projects to address the housing needed for workers and residents. Our current zoning density do not promote Juneau as a hospitable or livable capital city.
Okay, could you summarize?
Yeah, I have two case studies here, but I'll just provide a copy of the statement here that I wanted to make. But there's two case studies in downtown Juneau inside this study area, and we can't even bring a project forward. Either one is to replace 9 units, and the other is to build new units. And all that's allowed is 2 units under the density.
Okay, you have that so we can...
Yeah.
All right, thank you very much. Is there anyone else that's here to testify on this? Matt, I'll turn it back to the Assembly. Ms. White, it is yours to move, and then it is also yours to...
Well, I guess that was the thing. I was hoping this one wouldn't land on me because I had a few clarification questions. Any Planning Commission members or Mr. Cito willing to jump?
Yeah, would you move the ordinance first, though?
Okay. Well, then I will move Ordinance 2017-16 for adoption and will not ask for unanimous consent at this point until we can get clarification.
Okay. Do you wish to discuss this?
Yes.
Okay. Would you?
Mr. Cheney brought up some interesting points, and I already had a couple of other questions about it after having a little bit of time to look at it. And I noticed that one of the Planning Commission members was actually nudging a staff member. I was hoping she could help us a little bit.
Mr. Mayor, I think if we bring up Ms. McLean, that'd be the most appropriate source of fine detail on this topic.
We there a lot. So I got a little concerned when Mr. Cheney was pointing out his particular thing about how this ordinance wouldn't help. The overlay district wouldn't help the neighborhood that much. I just thought I'd get your thoughts on that.
Sure. So first, to be clear, we know this isn't going to solve every issue that's out there, including the density question. In Mr. Cheney's case, or I'll just speak directly to the ordinance as it's written. So we've written this so that people have several options when applying for any project currently. They can come in under the existing zoning, as they do today. They can still apply for a variance. That's still an option, although difficult to do. And then they can come in under this ordinance if it were passed. And the idea is that when we're speaking specifically to the second option in the ordinance, which is that the footprint of the existing residential building would be allowed to be rebuilt. The idea there is that if you had a house that had to be torn down or rehabilitated and that none of it could be saved, and so you're completely rebuilding, you would be allowed to rebuild in that footprint. So that's what that's speaking to. So the homes adjacent to Mr. Cheney that are building right up almost to the property lines, they'd be allowed to rebuild in their existing footprint that house as it stands today. Unless it encroaches into the public right-of-way, that would not be allowed, and you also wouldn't be allowed to encroach onto a neighboring property. But you would get those reduced setbacks, so it would help you rebuild that house that you have existing. The other is that we would take those averaging numbers that Mr. Cheney also showed up there, and it would correlate to whichever setback you were looking for a reduction in. So if you wanted to reduce your front yard setback, for instance, from 20 feet to a lesser degree, we would take the average of the properties within 150 feet for those front yard setbacks as well, and you would have the flexibility to be within the average of those or up to 20 feet, which is allowed today in that area. In Mr. Cheney's case, he's already down to about 1.6 feet, and so it may not help in that situation. And we know that problem's probably going to exist occasionally where this may not help everyone out there 100% of the time, but we feel that it's going to help a majority of the items that we've seen over the years. We know that variances in the past have been used to address these issues, And so the idea for the overlay district is to address those same issues that we keep seeing time and again in downtown Juneau and downtown Douglas, specifically the setbacks, the lot coverage, and the vegetative cover. And it's not to necessarily address every issue or every challenge we know that exists with the current zoning, but it's the ones we've seen the most variances for. The other issue, as you all know, is that the variances, they're not a tool for flexibility. They weren't designed to be so under any law. Over time, pretty much everywhere, they've been used for that reason. And as case law grows and the appeals grow and the case law grows, it gets harder and harder to achieve what a variance used to be able to get you. And so the idea was to allow some flexibility to the Planning Commission to address the items we see the most of through this ordinance, and at the same time provide the staff the ability and the time to create new zoning that we know will better fit these areas.
Ms. White, your follow-up, and then Mr. Keel.
Okay, and Ms. McLean, do you feel that the sunset date of 24 months out is adequate or necessary? Or, I mean, couldn't we just, like, eliminate that line of code once everything's fixed? Or do you feel that lights a fire under CDD and the Planning Commission? I guess I'm just trying to figure out the logic behind that.
I think, one, it's certainly to light a fire under CDD and keep us moving on this and keep it a priority. It's also, I think, overlay districts are new to Juneau, so it's also to offer a little bit of comfort knowing that this has a sunset period on it, and so that we're not going to keep extending it and extending it. We're going to fix the underlying problem as best we can. And so the 24 months, again, should coincide roughly when we're completing or getting towards the end, anyway, of a downtown plan for Juneau. And then the 36 months for Douglas was the idea that we would at least potentially be beginning the downtown plan in Douglas and starting those public conversations there so that it could kind of flow together in a meaningful way and we start having those community dialogues with the public.
Okay, thank you. Okay, before I go to Mr. Keel's questions, I don't want to keep the manager and the attorney in the dark, so could you turn that light back on over there? Okay, thanks, Mr. Keel.
That's illuminating. Thank you. we're doing zoning. Okay. We're perking up where we can. Ms. McLean, I see very much the ambiguity that Mr. Cheney brought forward. My first blush is to say he's reading it right and the intent you're expressing is not what this says. So I guess maybe I need the definition of footprint. Is my roof line part of the footprint of my building or is it my foundation?
Usually the foundation would be the footprint. But you would be allowed, it wouldn't be taken into consideration, but you could still build that roof line as it exists. But the measurements for setbacks, which this is referring to, measure to the foundation of the building. If you're measuring a setback from your property line, you measure to the foundation or whatever that first foundation is you're coming to.
And so if I wanted a bay window that extended 24 inches closer to the property line than my foundation, that'd be okay. That's not the footprint.
It's not the footprint, correct.
And it is okay to extend that into the...
Currently there are exceptions under the code that allow you to put in bay windows that may encroach. I believe it's up to 2 feet. I can look it up in the code if you want the specifics, but we do already have that exception in the code.
Appreciate that. That I think helps me understand how we're using footprint. In with the example of a deck or some other addition to a house, though, and I apologize. I read the Planning Commission minutes on this. I don't remember discussion of this. Where do we see risk or where do we see harm in allowing the existing footprint to set the setback rather than to set a hard outline limitation?
Could you say that again?
Mr. Cheney suggests that the footprint of the existing building sets the distance, as opposed to, and what you've suggested is that the footprint of the building is an outline, period. It's not a distance, it's a spot. It's a line, a shape.
I think we're saying the same thing. What I heard Mr. Cheney saying was that his house is sort of built on an angle, and at one point it's 1.6 feet from the property line. So if he added an addition to that, it could be 1.6 the whole way. That's what I heard him say. And so what the intent here is that you could rebuild your existing footprint, not something new. So you'd have to meet what his house is built to today. So 1.6 here, and then as it, whichever way it went, this way, I guess, went into the property. That's the footprint he would be allowed to have under this ordinance, not adding onto that 1.6. Is that clear?
That's the why question. What's wrong with the deck?
I think our, so the intention was that what we have seen, what we've seen in the past is that if you tear down a house and you're trying to rebuild what you had, you couldn't necessarily do that without variances. And so the intent of this was to make it clear that if you tore down your house for whatever reasons today, you could rebuild it within to that same footprint because it's no greater impact onto the neighborhood than was already existing before you tore it down. Or you could take the average of the setbacks, so you might gain a little bit there as well. But the intent wasn't to let someone go above and beyond what already exists there today. I guess the option is yours. Whichever one gets you the most to still fit in the neighborhood is what you would be allowed to proceed with.
I appreciate what you're saying, but what I read in the Planning Commission minutes and what I read on page one, right, the PC talked about additions to buildings, and page one, line 18, talks about the expansion of existing residential buildings.
Mm-hmm. And so if you were doing an expansion, then your option would be to take the average setback of your neighboring properties so that you're still fitting in to the neighborhood.
I guess my thought is the neighborhood, the photo that Mr. Cheney showed us certainly doesn't suggest that a deck that comes a couple feet from the line doesn't fit in.
And I don't remember the numbers, to be honest, that he had up there. So if the average of the rear, I think that's his front yard, rather. Rear? Okay. If the averages of the rear setbacks got him down to whatever he needed to be, he could use that as well. So it may help or it may not. I didn't see all the numbers that were up there from the back. But he still would have the option of taking the average setbacks of all the average setbacks of rear properties within 150 feet and being consistent with those to build a deck.
Ms. White?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So I just while you guys were talking, I came up with one more question that does have me really concerned because, you know, one of the people who testified today was third generation of his home to live at the same address. And God forbid, if he's listening, I would never wish this upon him. But if something did happen to his house and it needed to be rebuilt, just in my experience with my day job, at least 75% of the properties built before 1980 have no as-built survey. How are you going to verify what his footprint was? That he was at 1.6 or whatever. I mean, Mr. Cheney showed us his actual mm-hmm. as-built survey. There's a lot of houses downtown for which there is no as-built.
We would have to do the research and see if we had any building permits or plans on file that showed that existing footprint as it is.
Mm-hmm.
Could also use, I suppose, photographic evidence at times. And we would have to go from there. And if not, then possibly they would use the other option that's available to them, which is the average of the other houses.
Hmm.
Okay. No. I've called your office many times looking for as-builts, and you're not going to find it on a 1940 house. City doesn't have them. Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So it struck me when we had Ms. Johnson spoke that I wasn't exactly sure, and I looked. The overlay district extends north to the property immediately before the Aurora Arms condos. Is there a reason that was chosen? It's sort of right in the middle of a block of well, that one apartment building, mostly homes there. What determined our northern cutoff there? Northwest cutoff, I guess.
The intention was to really take into account the Highlands and some of the dwelling units just north of there, this overlay district, to be clear, would not help the situation that was presented earlier with Aurora Arms, because that is related to the density. And so no changes to density are allowed under this overlay district either, so it's not a solution for that problem.
No, I got that part.
And I think that was the intent. We stopped at where we knew the allowed uses occur. And so Aurora Arms would not be allowed under this ordinance because of the density.
No, I got that part. But it's in the same zone as, you know, you get to 1960, 1970 Glacier, and you've got single family right up against property lines. Is there a reason that doesn't extend just to basically the end, the end of the Aurora Harbor?
I think if you keep heading out Glacier Ave, most of those homes are actually conforming. They're set back a ways off of Glacier Ave. I would say at least, I'm guessing 20 to 30 feet, only because I happen to be moving to one of them. So I'm pretty familiar with the one just on the other side of Aurora. So I'm pretty sure that most of those would meet current zoning and wouldn't really need the overlay district that far out. So the intent was to keep this small and limited to the areas that we really saw the variances over the years occurring in. And so the Highlands and kind of up along Ross Way is really where they ended, more or less. And the same on Douglas, it was chosen for the same reasons. Those were the areas where the lots are really small and they don't conform to the current zoning, and where we thought that people may need relief.
All right, further discussion? We have a motion on the floor. Would the clerk please repeat the motion?
It's to adopt this ordinance.
Okay. Fast way of doing it. So we're at ordinance 2017-16, amending the land use code relating to alternative development overlay districts. Is there objection? There's objection.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
So I am interested in looking at an adjustment that would address the issue that Mr. Cheney brought up. The language really is pretty ambiguous, and I apologize that I don't know whether we have a definition in code of the footprint of the building. I appreciate staff's description. But it seems to me that we have an ordinance that says right up front that it's meant to include expansions of existing buildings, and then it says you can only build to the existing footprint. And in these very, very tight old neighborhoods, the opportunity for a little enhancement or improvement here and there can be a good thing. You don't always have to get a street closure permit to party with the neighbors. I apologize, Mr. Cheney. I left before the dancing started at that party. actually, maybe I should have people in the neighborhood thank me for leaving before the dancing started. I would be interested in, and I wasn't aware of this particular sub-issue before this came up. But if there is language that the attorney could suggest that would would get us away from strict adherence to the footprint and instead let the existing footprint set the setback for additions to the property. That, I think, would better serve the intent of the ordinance, as it says on page 1.
Madam Attorney, do you have anything prepared, or would you like us to take a small recess? And
I don't have anything prepared. This is the first I've heard of that. Mr. Kiel, there is a definition of footprint in the code already. There also is provisions related to decks and bay windows in the same chapter as this amendment would appear. The way that I read the language right now, it's an either or. So am I hearing what you would like to do is eliminate the requirement that it be built in the same footprint and just simply use those as a guideline for building anywhere on the lot using those same dimensional standards?
No, I think, Madam Attorney, what you just described would be far more permissive than what I have in mind. If a building doesn't extend beyond closer to a property line than the average of its neighbors, then we don't need to get closer than that. But if it already does, then some expansion within that same framework, if not to that same footprint, seems perfectly appropriate.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
Might I suggest a short recess where I can speak to Mr. Kiel and come back with a proposed amendment?
Certainly, Ms. Gladyszewski.
I can do it after the discussion. I believe that the intent of this is to get away from the Planning Commission doing variances that they continue to do to rebuild the same house, and you have to basically make it up. It doesn't really fit the variance criteria. So this is not to the intention of this, and the Planning Commission certainly didn't discuss adding extra building into the dense place. It's to just do what we've already done while we're reworking on the plan. This kind of amendment, to me, is at the last minute is going to be difficult to. I don't believe it has a full hearing. I don't believe the Planning Commission talked about it. I don't believe the Planning Department talked about it. I think we can do this kind of thing in another ordinance. I think that right now, my understanding of the intent of this is to basically allow what's being allowed without all the rigmarole that we currently do, while we continue to work on rules for the neighborhood. So I'm not in favor of amending it at the last minute, but if we see some language, we'll see.
Okay, Mr. Kiel, do you wish to confer with the city attorney to come up with an amendment, or do you wish to?
I would appreciate, man. I read the minutes, and I read, page 1, line 18, the construction of new residential buildings and the expansion. Also restoration repair, but expansion of existing residential buildings. I'm trying to square what's in here with what else is in here.
Okay. Why don't we just give you... Yes?
Well, this just might help. So one of the reasons, the impetus behind this was a variance that the Planning Commission denied because the variance criteria hadn't been met, but it was a situation where someone wanted to build on, rebuild onto their... where their existing home was, but to build it a little bit differently. I can't remember if it was a little bit bigger. But that was one of the reasons why they felt like this needed to happen now, not only to allow them to continue current practice, which was using a variance for the purpose of flexibility, as Jill so eloquently stated a few moments ago.
All right, we're due for a break anyway, so
yeah.
25 after.
And this is KTOO Juno. You're listening to the live broadcast of the City and Borough Juno Assembly. They're on taking a short break, so will we.
I can see her lying back in her satin dress, in a room where you do what you don't confess. Sundown, you better take care. If I find you've been creeping round my back stairs, sundown, you better take care. If I find you've been creeping round my back stairs. Looking like a queen in a sailor's dream, and she don't always say what she really means. Sometimes I think it's a shame when I get feeling better when I'm feeling no pain. Sometimes I think it's a shame when I get feeling better when I'm feeling no pain. Picture every move that a man could make. Getting lost in her loving is your first mistake. Sundown, you better take care. If I find you've been creeping round my back stairs. Sometimes I think it's a sin when I feel like I'm winning when I'm losing again.
And let's take this opportunity to check the weather. Tonight, scattered showers, mostly cloudy, with lows around 47. Partly sunny skies in the forecast for tomorrow, with highs near 60. Overnight, low 46, with increasing clouds. Let's keep the music going.
Listen, I must have West Jamaica, sure is a mountain shining down the river. All my friends there pulling on those reeds, younger than the mountain, going like a breeze from the road. Cosmic, the sun, you, my
painted on the sky. Miss it, taste some moonshine. Tears gone on my eye. Country road.
Listening to KTOO Juneau, bringing you live broadcast of the City and Borough Juneau's Assembly meeting. They're in recess right there, taking a short break right now, so we will check weather. Tonight, scattered showers, mostly cloudy skies with a low around 47, with more rain over in the forecast for tomorrow, but then brightening up in the afternoon with highs near 60 miles per hour. More rain in the forecast tomorrow night with lows dipping into the mid-40s. They're taking a longer break than they said they would, so let's play another, none of this hold music, let's play another song.
Broken switches, broken gates. lives, broken tools, people bending, broken rules, hound dog howling, bullfrog broken, everything is broken.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The city attorney and Ms. McLean did some remarkable verbal gymnastics, and I am 98% comfortable with what they wrote, which is not quite comfortable enough. So I will be a pain in the nuisance when this issue comes back before us with the rewrite of the comp plan, but not tonight. Thank you. I appreciate everyone's indulgence.
All right. You have a motion before you. Again, Madam Clerk, will you read the motion?
To adopt Ordinance 2017-16, amending the Land Use Code relating to alternative development overlay districts.
See, you have me scared, so. All right. Is there objection? Seeing none, the motion has carried. Unfinished business, Mr. Manager.
I have none.
New business. Resolution 2779-9, Madam Clerk.
This is a resolution supporting the disposal of Lot C1 Juneau Subport Subdivision by the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority.
Mr. Manager.
The Mental Health Trust Authority, through its trust land office, is in receipt of a proposal to purchase the Subport property from a local private investor. This resolution would voice the Assembly's support for the sale of the property. I recommend you adopt this resolution.
Is there any public comment? Ms. Gladyszewski.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would move that we adopt Resolution 2799 and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there any objection? Resolution 2799 has been adopted. With music. Notice of appeal. Granite Mountain Property, LCC versus Planning Commission, USE 2017-006. And I will skip the clerk and go directly to the manager
Mr. Mayor.
The attorney.
I usually do it. You want to do it? Sure. On May 23rd, 2017, the Planning Commission approved a conditional use permit for a marijuana cultivation facility in an industrial zone at 1758 Anka Street. On June 14th, a timely appeal of the Planning Commission's decision was filed. In accordance with the Appeals Code, the Assembly must decide whether to accept or reject the appeal. If you determine, after liberally construing the notice of appeal in order to preserve the rights of the appellant, that there has been a failure to comply with the appellate rules, or if the notice of appeal does not state grounds upon which any of the relief requested may be granted, you may reject the appeal. If the appeal is accepted, you must decide whether the Assembly will hear the appeal itself or if it will assign the appeal to a hearing officer. If you decide to hear the appeal yourselves, a presiding officer should be appointed. In hearing an appeal, the Assembly sits in a quasi-judicial capacity and must avoid discussing the case outside of the hearing process. See CBJ 015230, impartiality. As this is a quasi-judicial matter, I make no recommendation.
Okay, and before I ask whether to accept or reject the appeal, I will tell you that I talked to Madam Attorney as I had discussions on this beforehand, but not to the point where they were substantial. So I will not ask to be excused on this one.
No.
All right. We need to decide whether the Assembly, Mr. Gregory, will hear the appeal.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would like to disclose that I have a potential conflict of interest on this appeal. Mr. Todd Arugio often represents the organization that I work for in legal matters. I talked with Ms. Mead earlier this afternoon and wanted to disclose this to the Assembly. And Ms. Mead, what did we determine
that it's...
My advice was, although it may not be, it is not a financial interest, it is a, I think, a personal interest, as the state law defines a conflict of interest for purposes of appeals, which our code does not cover, but the concept, I think, would be the same, where Mr. Arujo is sometimes acts as Mr. Gregory's attorney within the context of his employment. Mr. Gregory expressed that might be a biased situation for him, or he might have difficulty being impartial. And I recommended that he bring the question to the assembly and declare whether he felt he could be impartial or not, or whether he would prefer to sit out the appeal, and then have the assembly weigh in on that.
So, Ms. Gregory, what is your...
It would be my preference to abstain from dealing with this appeal.
Is there objection to that? Seeing none, you're excused then.
Thank you.
Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I also checked with the attorney, since I sit on the statewide marijuana control board. And I did find out that the applicant, Taku Horticulture Company, has started an application process with the Marijuana Control Board, but does not have any of its final paperwork in or processed, so there's been nothing to come before the commission. Since this appeal mainly deals with Granite Mountain properties, and it's an issue that generally doesn't come before the Marijuana Control Board, the attorney and I agreed that I don't have a conflict, but I wanted to declare it anyway. It may be that if I participate in the appeal and their actual application does come before the Marijuana Control Board, the state attorney may well say I have a conflict and I won't be able to participate at the state level. But that's been an issue between the city and the state before. But I just wanted to make sure that people knew that I was on the statewide Marijuana Control Board. That I did check with the attorney, and if we move ahead with the appeal, I will participate as an assembly member.
Okay. Ms. White?
Yes, I didn't even think to talk to the attorney. I've dealt with Todd Arujo on both sides, opposing or on my side, several times over the last, well, he hasn't been here the whole 18 years I've been doing it, but... I wouldn't even begin to consider it a conflict of interest, because we take it one case at a time. So, but I guess I should disclose that.
That does sound like a different situation to me than Mr. Gregory's.
Yeah. So I don't see a conflict.
All right, we're down to 8. The Assembly must decide whether to accept or reject the appeal. Mr. Dan Kerfus.
I move we reject the appeal.
What?
All right.
I move to reject the appeal.
We have a motion to reject the appeal. Ms. Gladyshesky.
I haven't had a motion to reject an appeal before. Under what grounds can we do that?
There are only 3 grounds that you can reject an appeal under. One is that the failure to comply with the appellate rules, in this case that wouldn't apply. If the notice of appeal doesn't state grounds upon which any relief can be granted, then you can reject it for that reason as well. Actually, those are the only 2. In deciding whether to reject an appeal or not, you have to read the notice of appeal liberally and in favor of the appellant.
So you say the words, the second words again? The first ones don't apply. The first one didn't apply because they filled out the paperwork.
Right.
And the second one was?
The second one is failure to state grounds upon which relief can be granted. So in order to consider that, you would take a look at the notice of appeal, which is at packet page 99. And consider whether the issue described on appeal is something that you can address. whether you have the jurisdiction to address and whether the relief requested, which in this case is to overturn the Planning Commission's decision, whether you have the jurisdiction to do so.
Okay. Then I believe we have the jurisdiction to do so, to not grant, to overturn this permit. So I don't see how, if those indeed are the two, only two things, reasons we can reject an appeal, I don't see how we can reject this appeal.
Further discussion? Okay, seeing none, is there objection to the motion?
I object.
Clerk will please call the roll. And the motion is to reject the appeal.
Ms. Becker?
Yes.
Ms. Gladyszewski?
No.
Mr. Gregory? Oh, sorry. Mr. Jones?
No.
Mr. Keel?
Yes.
Mr. Nankervis?
Yes.
Ms. Weldon?
Yes.
Ms. White?
Yes.
Got everybody? Mayor Kelf?
No.
Motion to reject the appeal passes 5A, 3-nay.
All right.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
Just for clarity of the record, in case this is further appealed, is there anything the Assembly wishes to add about the reason for rejecting the appeal?
Mr. Mayor, may I explain my vote?
Mr. Keel?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. By way of explanation of my vote, which I think Robert's Rules allows, at least I hope so, the appellant made arguments having to do with the property effect on property values and having to do with inadequate written findings that did not inform us of the basis for their decision. Having read the Planning Commission's decision, I saw clear discussion of those issues and clear direction. And so having looked at the code sections suggested by the appellant, having read what was sent to us, I could not see any situation in which I could imagine the appellant prevailing. And so having construed it in the appellant's favor as best I could, I just couldn't see it happening.
Okay, Mr. Nankervis, do you have anything to add to that?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. No, I think Mr. Keel summed it up pretty good. I have the same situation. I couldn't find anything that would make me think that their issues brought up on appeal weren't addressed adequately enough. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nankervis.
Mr. Mayor.
I think that in the part of the code which requires you to liberally construe the notice of appeal, as I understand the case law that interprets very similar language under state law, what that means is you can't consider whether you can't make a substantive finding at this point. You can't. You should be reading the notice of appeal as if the evidence were there, could you grant the relief that was requested? If you do not have the jurisdiction to grant the relief requested, in other words, if there were sufficient evidence or insufficient evidence that went to the question about the economic value or the impact on the economic value of the surrounding property, would you be able to grant the relief, which is reversal of the Planning Commission's decision? If you could grant that relief, then I think you must accept the appeal. If you couldn't, then you can reject the appeal. But I think I do not think under the standard that as the court interprets that language, you can consider the appeal and make a substantive determination about whether or not you think there is validity in the argument. I think this is just a...
Mr. Mayor?
Mr. Van Kervis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I disagree with the lawyer on this. I can't believe that there is not an ability for the Assembly to deny it based on what we have in front of us. Thank you.
Further discussion. Just Ms. Bratuszewski.
Back to this. So this thing on the bottom of our notice of appeal, standard of review and burden of proof. This is about the appeal itself. Where's the language about how to decide whether to take an appeal?
It's in the code, in our 150.
But where could I, can you get it?
Or yes.
Can you read it? Because that's where we are, not deciding the merits of the issue.
This is in 0150070, subsection E2. The notice of appeal shall be liberally construed in order to preserve the right of the appellant. The appeal agency may reject the appeal for failure to comply with these rules, or if the notice of appeal does not state grounds upon which any of the relief requested may be granted.
Can you read that part? Grounds upon which what?
Or if the notice of appeal does not state grounds upon which any of the relief requested may be granted.
Thank you. Well, we've already voted on this, so I would give my notice of reconsideration.
All right. You're giving notice of reconsideration. You are on the prevailing side.
I was actually on not the prevailing side, but I don't think it matters. Isn't that correct?
That's correct.
Well, then you were not on the prevailing side. But it still matters. So would the Assembly like to reconsider this?
Not on the same day.
I'm not asking for reconsideration today.
Okay.
I could ask. But
you could.
I won't.
Right.
I'm just preserving our ability to talk about this again.
All right. Ms. Becker.
Do we have a timeline where we have to decide to accept or reject or take it? And are we within it if we wait till our next Assembly meeting?
That is the timeline, your next regular meeting.
So that's okay.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
Would the Assembly appreciate... a memo on what this legal standard is, just that legal standard about failure to state grounds upon which relief can be granted. It's a standard that is used by the court very often. There is a lot of case law on it, and I could provide you some of that explanation.
I think they would probably appreciate and need that. And it's my understanding that this has to be taken up at the next Assembly meeting or it dies. Correct? All right. All right, moving right along. Late filed application for community purpose exemption, Perseverance Theater. Manager.
Mr. Mayor, in your packet you have a memorandum from the city assessor. You have an application from Perseverance Theater and a corresponding letter from the theater's artistic director, as well as an older memorandum from the law department. I would direct you to page 2 of the assessor's memo, and that would be packet page 137, middle of page, assessor's comments, where the assessor closes and does not recommend granting this late filed application. Um, The theater, I think, is a well-supported institution, and I'm sure that there were lots of reasons to want to support the theater's case, but I am troubled seeing any daylight between the theater's administrative error and other scenarios where somebody might be late, and I think you should take the assessor's recommendation. Beyond that, I don't have any comments at this time.
Okay. And I believe we are at Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Given the comments from staff and from the memo from the assessor, I would move that the assembly reject the late file application for community purpose exemption for Perseverance Theater.
Okay. Ms. Gladyszewski.
Ask a question of the manager. Previously filed late applications, how many have we rejected, not rejected? Do you have any numbers on that at all? I guess I don't recall rejecting.
I think Ms. Mead might have to offer, but I don't have any history on this issue.
This is different than the late filed appeals that you normally consider. You normally consider the senior sales tax exemptions. Right. You have rejected those in the past, not often and after much deliberation, but you have, especially in the last couple of years. This is one of the first times that I think you have considered a late filed community purpose exemption.
We haven't. You can't think of any of these that have come before us.
The most similar one that has come before the city, not the assembly, but it went in front of the Board of Equalization, was the Juneau VOA case, and they rejected that appeal. But it was a similar question where they also had to apply the similar standard to determine whether, for the purposes of valuation, the exemption would apply when it had been late filed, and in that case they rejected it.
And why is it here instead of the Board of Equalization?
This is not a valuation issue. This gets very granular, but this is not actually a valuation issue. It is an exemption issue. So the exemptions under our code go straight to the assembly. If it is rolled in with a valuation issue, then it goes to the BOE.
Further questions or discussion? Seeing none, McClerk, please read the...
To reject the late filed application request.
Okay. Is there objection?
Mr. Mayor, I couldn't hear it.
Will the clerk please restate the...
The motion by Mr. Jones was to reject the late filed application request for the community purpose exemption for Perseverance Theater.
Thank you. Mr. Mayor, I object.
Okay. Clerk will please call the roll.
I'm just wanting to make clear that if he's having a hard time hearing, if he understands what the motion was, to reject, not to accept. I'm just...
Yep.
Mr. Dan Curvis, the motion was to reject the appeal, and you object to rejecting.
I'm sorry. I keep having to mess with the volume depending on who's talking. Who said what?
Let me try it. Do you wish to grant the exemption, or do you wish to go with the, finance department, the assessor, or whatever we're looking at?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I believe the motion was to reject the application by Mr. Jones. I object to that rejection.
Okay.
Got it.
All right.
We should not have those kinds of motions. We should have positive motions.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I love the organization dearly. My children are spending their days there for the next several weeks, but they just don't meet the criteria this time, so I'm supporting the motion. Thank you.
Anyone else? So now we'll call the roll.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Mr. Keel?
Yes.
Mr. Nankervis?
No.
Ms. Weldon?
Yes.
Ms. White?
Yes.
Ms. Becker?
Yes.
Ms. Gladyszewski?
Yes.
Mr. Gregory?
No.
Mayor Kelce?
Yes.
Motion to reject carries.
Okay. Staff reports.
No staff reports, Mr. Mayor.
Mayor's report. Mining subcommittee. Let's take care of that for the people that are here. In our last meeting, the charge was for the subcommittee. What actions should be taken to the proposed mining ordinance? Subcommittee is to recommend a process, including public process, to be taken. Recommend if the subcommittee should include additional members, and it is to recommend timelines. We had a discussion on how formal we want to make this or informal, and it is still fairly informal, but because of the need, I think that we do need to have some sideboards on it. And I will work with the chair of the subcommittee to establish some sideboards. At this time, I will appoint Ms. Weldon, Ms. Gladyszewski, and Mr. Gregory. And Mr. Gregory, if you would chair that for us, I would appreciate it.
Yes.
Right. We're on to the rest of the mayor's report. What you saw tonight was a new American coming in to appreciate the freedoms that we have. And I have asked and called upon the community to fly a flag on the 4th of July in appreciation of our freedoms and also in appreciation of those in the service that are defending those freedoms. So I hope that every home, every business, every public institution that we can will fly that flag on the 4th. And the mayor of White Horse is coming down for it. And he has evidently a very good tennis team, because if I'm wearing a White Horse hat at the next assembly meeting, our team lost. If not, he will wear a Juno hat at his assembly meeting. So let's go through the committee and liaison reports, starting with Ms. Becker.
Yeah, it wasn't meant for that. It never happens that way. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Finance Committee, Facilities Committee, our topic was the innovation procurement proposal, and the suggestion was to change the word most to lowest. No, I'm sorry. Change the word lowest to most for the qualified bidder. So instead of it being the lowest bidder that is awarded the bid, it's the most qualified bidder. So there can be some choices about how qualified that bidder is, even if they're not the lowest. And the other topic was transfer of funds, $1.3 million. From completed CIPs to the Peterson Hill subdivision. The Joint Assembly and School Board Facility Planning Committee, we received the finished report from the consultants. It's a great deal of information, including current enrollment in each of the schools, projected enrollment for schools and total district, space usage, whether or not the space is being used correctly. It has extra people that are not related to actually teaching students, what the capacity of the school is, how the energy is being used, and what deferred maintenance is necessary. It's a very large packet, a lot of good information, and I believe those packets would be available for anyone on the Assembly who's not on the committee who would like to have that. Our charge is to read it and get any question to Joanne Lott at the Jensen Yorba Lott architect firm. Docks and Harbors had a discussion about putting a small boat harbor by the mental health land next to the proposed Ocean Center to be used for yachts and small cruise ships, which made me a little nervous, but I asked the question. They said a small cruise ship is up to 150 feet. Who knew? They also talked about putting a fuel dock in Stater Harbor for the for-hire float. There's a lot of discussion about that, and certainly no decision was made. And I believe Mr. Yucatel is really not real supportive of that idea. At the chamber board meeting, I gave the report on many, many things that we're doing on our agenda and what we're doing for the budget, and just basically did a catch-up time, although the chamber board is pretty astute. Then at the last luncheon meeting of the chamber, Wayne Jensen talked about bringing the statue across the United States and the different places they stopped, like Seward and Lincoln, to talk about the statue and to show the statue to those people. At the Alaska Committee, we helped welcome the new Coast Guard cutter, Bailey Barco. We approved sending a letter to the Assembly in support of the purchase of 2 electric buses. And that request came originally from the Sustainability Committee, and Alaska Committee agreed that that would be a good request to make to the Assembly. There were many concerns about the number of stories that are being planned to be built on the building on the Franklin lot. And basically, there were not positive comments about that. And there are no scheduled meetings for July.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Becker. Mr. Jones?
Clarification. I was out of town for the School Facilities Committee. I saw the report. Mm-hmm. Haven't been able to find a copy online. I'm probably looking in the wrong place. But if we were to get a packet and comments back to the architect, Joanne Lott, when is that due? When do we have to have comments, if we have any?
We have not called another meeting, and I think that when the committee says they've had a chance to do all their comments and Joanne Lott feels she's received comments, we'll call a meeting to conclude this. So really, we haven't done a time certain on that. I think all of you need to get a packet before we can
close
that
off. We get the packet from engineering or clerk's office?
Yeah, can make sure we send them.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks.
That was my question. Can we get a packet?
Yeah. So okay. Ms. Sika will see that there are members of the committee that already have them.
Mr. Gill?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I got mine on the city's agenda website. June 14 was our joint meeting, and you can download all couple of hundred pages there if you aren't interested in yet more paper in your assembly file at your house. Let's see. The Finance Committee last met on Wednesday, June 14. We heard a presentation from staff and a consultant on the city's debt capacity, how we've been looking at it, alternate ways to look at it, ways that the Assembly might think about bonding in the future. We had a discussion about our future budget process and ways we might improve it for the next fiscal year. And then we heard significant presentations on proposals for the 1% sales tax. Got through almost half of them. The remainder are still coming this Wednesday's meeting. Staff also, as a reminder to assembly members, staff also gave us a packet of some potential municipal infrastructure funding requests to the federal government in conjunction with a proposed federal infrastructure program. And Everyone ought to read those and get your put your thinking cap on about them, because they're also on the agenda for this Wednesday's meeting. You should all have a packet at your desk. If not, we can be sure that staff gets you one. The campus council is currently on summer hiatus. The university has an operating budget. It's a lot slimmer than they were hoping for, and so they're working pretty hard right now on how to adapt to an $8 million cut below the governor's cut this coming fiscal year. It's a big lift, but they are working pretty hard on it at the university. The Municipal League Board has not met since our last meeting. However, we have our summer meeting coming up in Haines in August. You've all received email about that. Be sure and work with the clerk's office if you would like to attend. I also forwarded to each of you tonight the Municipal League's position statements. Changes to the position statements need to come from a member municipality by resolution. So take a look at them. If they don't read the way you think they ought to, let's talk about it as an assembly and get a change proposed to the league. But that process was put in place a few years ago to make sure that any proposed changes come from member municipalities as opposed to an assembly member from somewhere. And I think that concludes my committee and liaison reports. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Gill. Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Human Resources Committee met prior to tonight's assembly meeting. The first topic we took up was a work session related to the information I had passed out. The last meeting related to the Juvenile Commission on Aging. We heard from a couple of members, one of the existing commission members and one a past one. The committee reviewed that and have agreed to have me work with clerk's office and the law department to better lay out a resolution to reconstitute and change the way the Juvenile Commission on Aging works, and we will bring that back to the HRC on July 31st to see if we're at that point ready to come before the assembly committee of the whole, probably, or not. That took up the first 35-40 minutes of our meeting. Secondly, we took up the Historic Resources Advisory Committee, their annual report. Their chair and the CDD staff were there to talk about the report and answer some questions. I would recommend that you all read that report. It's very interesting. In addition, we had appointments to the Historic Resources Advisory Committee. There were three seats for terms expiring on 6/30/2020. We had two applicants, and the Human Resources Committee is recommending the appointment of Anastasia Tarman and the reappointment of Shauna McMahon to the Historic Resources Advisory Committee, terms expiring 6/30/2020.
Is there any objection? Seeing none, nomination's carried.
Thank you. We also got the annual report from the Juvenile Commission on Sustainability. The chair was absent, but Mr. Steve Benke did give the report. They went over their activities for the year. They highlighted the energy plan that they had been working on. They highlighted this series of meetings that have been held over the last year, and anticipate that they will have that document ready to come before the assembly, and hopefully the committee of the whole for discussion sometime in August. They will know more a little bit later this summer. And again, I would recommend that people read that report that is in the packet. We had appointments to the Juvenile Commission on Sustainability. We had three seats available for terms expiring on 6/30/2020. We had two applicants. The Human Resources Committee is recommending the appointment of Edward King to a seat expiring on 6/30/2020.
Is there objection? Nomination carried.
We also had a discussion of appointments to the Local Emergency Planning Committee. There are several vacancies, and as you know, for the LAPC, there are specific seats based on their particular expertise. We recommend, and it is the state that makes the final appointment. And so the recommendation from the Human Resources Committee is that Joel Curtis go from the hazardous waste transportation alternate seat to the full seat, and that we nominate Paul Kira to take that alternate seat for a term that expires 12/31/2017, and then we recommend that that appointment be extended to 12/31/2020.
Is there objection? Nomination carried.
We also had the Treadwell Arena Advisory Board. We had an additional applicant. There are two seats available. We had one applicant, and the Human Resources Committee recommends the reappointment of Brett Connell to a term expiring 5/31/2020.
Is there objection to the nomination? Seeing none, the nomination is carried.
And that is the Human Resources Committee report. I did not attend the last airport board meeting. I was traveling. I did read the minutes. There wasn't much to report on. It was a lot of status reports. The only thing that I might ask, and I'll save my comments to later, is I did read where they canceled the June 22nd meeting, which would have been last week, on the regulations process, and I will ask some questions about that when I get to comments and questions. The DBA meeting was held just before I left that morning, and they're moving ahead with the Main Street issues. They had a lot of discussion about public art. There's a group of people that are going around the country painting murals that relate to the community. They discussed whether or not they wanted to try to attract that particular group to come here. There was some objection from some local artists, and I think they pulled back and they want to talk with some of the local artists to see if that's still an issue. And I know the manager's familiar with that. I guess he offered one side of the parking garage. But there was a lot of discussion and no decision made. I missed the last LAPC meeting. We dealt with one of the appointments tonight. I will miss the next one, as I will be in Fairbanks for the Marijuana Control Board meeting. With that is my committee and liaison report.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Ms. Gladyszewski.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Bartlett Hospital met on May 23rd. They had a short meeting, uncharacteristically. They talked pretty technical things about some bylaws and rules, changes they were making, medical staff reports, some confidential reports. They had a visit from the Washington State Hospital Association. Bartlett is trying to beef up its quality program, so they talked to those folks about that. You all got an email that Sally Schneider has taken in, who is the chief behavioral officer there, has taken a job in Pittsburgh. Her last day is July 7th. And various other technical things that you probably don't need to know about. The Parks and Rec Advisory Committee has not met since we last met. The Juneau Commission on Sustainability met on the 14th of June. As Mr. Jones mentioned about the energy plan, it's now called the Juneau Renewable Energy Strategy. They debated about what it would be best known as. They submitted a draft to us in July. They've been having meetings, public meetings, for months, reworking on it. They've spent many, many, many hours on it. So they've just approved their draft, but there are pieces in various places, so they have someone, staff, has to take all those pieces and put them together in one document, and they hope to have that done in the next month. So then it will come here at some point. They talked about their annual report, which they approved it, which went to the Human Resources Committee today, as Mr. Jones mentioned. They're talking about redoing their website, which they should because it's not updated very often. So that's the Juno Commission. That's my reports for today, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. White?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So at the last Lands Committee meeting, we got an update on the Pedersen Hills subdivision. And in addition, we discussed in quite great length the land trade that is proposed with the Aurora Arms Condominium Association that should help with their problem in exchange for using their current access as an access road into additional upland property that the city owns. We're talking about giving them a trade for enough land that it will solve the problem, which actually not only would make Ms. Johnson happy, but my mother, if she knew, because Ms. Johnson's sister was actually a good friend of my mother's. So we got that taken care of. At the next Lands Committee meeting, which will be on July 10th, we will have a fairly full a schedule. There's some issues with another condo association. There's a few condo associations in Juneau that are built on leased land. There's one of them is built on city land. There's another one that's built on the property owned by the Catholic Church. And these also create financing issues. When there's less than 10 years left on the lease, the banks don't like to write mortgages on them. So they're always writing these leases for decades out into the future. That's one of the issues that we're going to look at. We're also going to get a presentation from Tom Matisse about any tsunami danger that the city and borough of Juneau could be in, because apparently that would affect the Lands Committee. To Planning Commission tomorrow, well, first I'll talk about Planning Commission on May 23rd. I was in Seattle, and that was when I had my thing taken care of, my eyes taken care of. And so I'm still catching up on what happened. The agenda for tomorrow appears to be fairly light. Most of the stuff on it is on the consent agenda. Three out of four things on the entire agenda are actually pertain to Statter Harbor, and then there's one small rezone. The Aquatics Board has been meeting, prepping for their meeting with us on Wednesday. And then tomorrow before the Planning Commission meeting, our homeless task force will be meeting again, and we should have more of the group available at that time. And I believe that is the end of those reports. The rest will come on comments.
Okay, Mr. Jones?
You said your homeless task force will be meeting tomorrow?
Tomorrow before, on Planning Commission Tuesdays, 5 p.m., upstairs, room 224.
Okay. I was not able to, I went through the assembly calendar for now till the next month, and I do not see it posted. Any of the meetings. That's why I was curious that it was set scheduled for tomorrow, because if you look on the city calendar, there's no notice that it's meeting. I don't know if that's an issue for public notice or what, but
I'll say the committee members, we didn't know that there was a meeting tomorrow.
Okay. I thought it was Planning Commission Tuesdays at 5 p.m. Well, I guess we'll be rescheduled for the next one. I will contact the other people that I'm aware of, because I never say this right, the Juno Coalition on Housing and Homelessness was going to nominate one other member to join us, but I have no idea who that other member is. And as of this morning, my friend did not know who will be joining us, who's also in that commission. he didn't know who it was. So we might have somebody, unfortunately, make a trip to town.
We could talk afterwards, but we could tell you what happened at the
Okay. End. Okay.
Okay. All right. Anything else?
I'll save the rest.
All right. Ms. Weldon.
Okay. The school board met on June 13th. They went into executive session to evaluate, to do the evaluation of the superintendent, and hopefully that all went well. They had a first reading on the Talent Enrichment and Development Program Plan, which was formerly called Extended Learning. So if you're interested in that, you'll want to pay attention to what's going on there. They approved the policy on school-sponsored trips. They adopted the Skills for a Healthy Life curriculum, and they adopted the 2017-2018 Board of Education calendar. And their next meeting, I believe, is August 8th at 6 p.m., and the site is moved to JDH next year instead of Thunder Mountain. For JEDC, they're collaborating with the city on a second attempt at a grant for low or no emission buses for the city. They met with a team developing the Juneau Marina District about a proposed private harbor near the mouth of Gold Creek that Ms. Becker alluded to. And they're meeting to review the local fish fund concept organizational structure with partners. And they're doing some other things. And currently Mr. Holst is in Nigeria on a water sanitation project, which sounded fairly interesting. I think that's his second trip. Their next meeting is Wednesday, July 19th at noon at the JEDC building. And that's it for me.
Thank you, Ms. Weldon. Mr. Gregory.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Eagle Crest Board has not met since the last time we met. Coming up on a little activity for them, Mr. Scanlon, who is the new Eagle Crest manager, starts on June 28th, which is next Wednesday. The next Eagle Crest meeting is August 3rd. There will not be a July meeting due to the holiday and allowing Mr. Scanlon some time to get up to speed with what's happening on the mountain. The Affordable Housing Commission met on Tuesday, June 6th. It was their annual retreat where they discussed their plan for the upcoming year. I was able to take the comments from this body to that meeting and shared with them some of your thoughts. They set some priorities. Some of their discussion entailed the 1% sales tax renewal, possible opportunities for a down payment program for the mobile home program that's currently occurring, the accessory apartment program, and they had additional discussion about how a community land trust can work in our community, and they discussed possible funding for the Affordable Housing Fund. There was a motion by the commission to advise the assembly that the Affordable Housing Commission has set the following priorities, which is to fully fund the Juneau Affordable Housing Fund up to $500,000 per year. They're looking for part of the 1% sales tax. They would also like to find and create more. They would actually like to find ways to create more workforce housing for the 80% to 120% area median income target. And looking at how that can work with a community land trust model. They still have some committees that are wrapping up some committee work. Two of the members are working on a blighted property policy. They are continuing to look at mobile home and manufactured home parks and development of those parks and also ways to finance mobile homes, as there is currently no affordable mobile home financing options or very few mobile home financing options for mobile homes in our community.
Thank you, Mr. Gregory.
You are welcome.
Mr. Nankervis.
He has nothing.
I think I got it.
He sounds like it's very, very.
Thank you, Mr. Nankervis.
Whatever you said.
Mr. Nankervis, do you have any reports, or do you wish to skip that?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The committee of the whole has been in the past, and we will meet in the future. Actually, I don't know what day we're meeting because I can't pull it up on my phone right now. So perhaps the manager remembers what day we scheduled. I don't remember. Thank you.
I think he said
When is the next committee of the whole meeting?
Next is July 13th.
July 13th. It's Thursday, July 13th. Right? Thursday, July 13th. Put it on your calendars. It is on your calendars. All right. Mr. Dan Kervis, do you have any comments under Assembly comments?
No, thanks. I'm having some technical difficulties with the headset and the radio and stuff, trying to get everything to work. And I missed a bunch of stuff, but I think I got the gist of most things. I missed certain comments from some people, but I think I got most of it. Sorry about the feedback on it. Appreciate everybody's patience. Thanks.
All right. Thank you for hanging in there. And be safe. Mr. Gregory.
You know, talking with some community members, there is a question about whether or not our community was wise in their decision to remove fluoride from our water. That while our adult teeth might be healthy and doing all right, that children whose bodies are still developing don't have the same resistance to tooth decay that we have. And there are some households that are experiencing high rates of tooth decay in children that are brushing well, that are going to the dentist regularly, that are using fluoride toothpaste and wash, as well as sealants and every option afforded to them. So we might be hearing about that sometime soon. That concludes my comments.
Okay. Ms. Weldon?
I have none.
Ms. White?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I also was at the Bailey Barco commissioning and really enjoyed getting to be on a Navy ship again. Definitely was kind of different to be on one here in Juneau. I had a question for the city manager based upon one of our people who came to us tonight and was talking about Flint, Michigan. Does Juneau have any lead pipes that you are aware of?
Through the mayor, Juneau does not have lead pipes. The I can speak briefly to the issue. There's an EPA rule. It's called the lead and copper rule. Mm-hmm. And if your water is corrosive, what can happen is the water can, and corrosive is not even really the right chemistry term, it can leach lead and copper out of residential piping. Mm-hmm. So the piping might be in a person's home. Mm-hmm. So we don't have municipal pipe with lead in it. We certainly have pipe with copper. We have lots of copper. We do monitor water quality to make sure that we are in the bands of acceptable treatment. Our Gold Creek water source is heavily mineralized, and we don't do anything to it. We just pump it out of our wells. Our Salmon Creek water is a surface water source, and as such, it hasn't come in contact with much minerals in the environment, so it can be prone to want to pull minerals out of piping, and so we actually add soda ash at Salmon Creek. Mm-hmm. So it's a Flint has a very different issue, very different problems. And, and the public may be interested. I think we are just recently put out our consumer confidence report where we publish our water quality standards in our drinking water. And that's a big community asset, the quality of water that we have here.
It is a beautiful asset. It's one of the things that I show off about Juneau to people who are new to our community. Thank you for your answer to that question. The only other comment I had is, I'm going to say his name wrong, but our youngest, newest citizen firefighter, Masad Abdi, is that how he said his last name?
Abdi.
I appreciated the reminder, especially this close to the 4th of July, of how hard some people work for something that most of us wake up and take for granted every day. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. White. Ms. Gradyszewski.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Two things. One is the Aurora Arms issue. I'm not familiar with the issue, so Is that something you are aware of and are working on, and you want to tell us briefly?
Mr. Mayor, I could give a very brief report. So the Aurora Arms, I think Ms. Johnson described the situation properly. Mr. Cheney, Lands Manager, has come upon a solution that can meet city needs and the Aurora Arms needs. In looking at city lands, he's identified a piece of the mountain that is not in a hazard area that may be eligible for future development that has poor access. And he's identified a land trade with Aurora Arms that could it could give us access and lead the way to a rezoning that would be large enough that would meet both our needs. And Ms. White might know the date of the last lands packet, but that is an issue that we're working on. And I think to his credit, he's come up with a pretty good idea that meets two very different needs.
Okay, great. Just wanted to understand that we are working on it. Mm-hmm. Thank you. And the other thing is regarding the mayor's climate agreement. I would like us to support that. I think the five people that spoke made compelling arguments. So I don't know how that gets on the agenda, but I would, I guess, make a motion that we join, you know, to create a clean energy economy and adopt and honor and uphold those Paris agreements what we can. I mean, we have a climate action plan. We are already on our way. We're already doing those things. And if we could add our name to that, I think that would be a worthwhile endeavor.
There is objection. You want to call the roll?
Ms. Gladyszewski?
Yes.
Mr. Gregory?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Mr. Keel?
Yes.
Mr. Nankervis? Ms. Weldon?
Yes.
Ms. White?
No.
Ms. Becker?
No.
Mr. Nankervis? Mayor Kelsch?
No.
Motion carries 5A, 3A.
Thank you. That's all. Thank you.
Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Question to, I guess, the attorney and the manager. Uber Lyft, I talked about before. There was a lot of other issues related to docks and harbors, parking issues, permitting for Class B, Class A vans or whatever. There was the airport had their regulations out. I guess I read while I was out of town that meeting was canceled and they weren't going forward with the public comment period on those regulations. So I'd like some explanation about where we're at with that, if any place. And then Mr. Harris stated this morning, or this morning, it's been a long meeting, earlier in the meeting that he understood that Uber says they aren't going to be collecting the sales tax. And I would like some response. Is that true? Since I know the city manager and others have been meeting with Uber representatives, and I like answers.
So the regulations got pulled because we have no authority to promulgate that type of regulation against this industry under state law. That was the reason for pulling those. And under state law, we have the ability to impose sales tax on the TNC drivers. And Uber will not, Uber, the TNC company, or any of the TNC companies, they are not, they individually as the entity are not going to register with the sales tax office. They do facilitate the collection of the fares, arguably on behalf of the drivers. There are a number of things in our code related to the collection of fares, related to receipts that are given to purchasers, where the receipt must have on the face of the receipt the sales tax amount, that if Uber the entity is going to collect the fare, provide the receipt, and do this through their app, there are things that they're going to have to comply with. And arguably, they should be requiring proof of the driver's sales tax registration. The drivers should be registering with the sales tax office prior to beginning to provide service. But the entity itself does not have to remit sales tax for itself. In other communities, there are very few, but in other communities, they have entered into agreements with the local government or the state government, in most cases, to remit on behalf of the drivers. I don't know where that's going right now. We haven't discussed that. We haven't gotten past where we are right now, which is Uber saying we are not going to register as a sales tax entity, and we are right now drafting a response to that.
Can I follow up, Mr. Mayor?
Yes, certainly.
Given that, is in fact Uber operating or Lyft operating here in Juneau today? And what's happening in terms of sales tax? Because I realized things were immediate. I was out of state, but several instances on Facebook, people said, I took a Lyft, I liked it. And I'm going, you know, how can they do that if they're not registered to pay the sales tax?
So under our code, any driver who is providing sales services and not collecting, not having registered with the sales tax office and not collecting sales tax is violating the sales tax code, which is a criminal or civil violation.
So the new attorney that we're hopefully going to vote on soon will now have a third.
Right up their alley.
Right up their alley, sales tax, right?
It is a sales tax issue. I think that there is just not that information has not been provided, and I believe that we are planning on putting out a public service announcement to that effect so that anyone who is interested in becoming a transportation network company driver understands what their obligation is under city code.
I think also, since we have that authority, and I guess we're doing it, since it's not part of the, we have a series of sales tax exemptions. This is not one, so automatically we don't need to do anything to start collecting. Do we need to inform the public that if they use Uber or Lyft, they should ask about sales tax and whether their fare includes the sales tax? Is there any value in that? I mean, like you say, they're supposed to get a receipt that shows part of this cost is the sales tax. I get that at the grocery store. I get that anyplace else that charges sales tax. And if I used Uber or Lyft and I didn't get that, I might assume I didn't pay sales tax.
That is certainly something that we could cover in the public service announcement.
Okay, thank you very much. That's all I have. Thank you.
Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I guess it's good to hear that there's significant progress on the Aurora condominiums proposal. I look back, and the last thing I found on the lands agenda was in mid-February. And so it sounds like the lands chair has significant additional information. It would be good to bring that back before the lands committee if we're no longer talking about purchasing an adjacent piece for access to CBJ land, but instead working a trade. That would be good information for the rest of the lands committee to have. I did hope we could get an update on a question that sort of we put out there and then... there have been little fits and starts, but there were questions from staff about how to proceed with the city's annexation notions. I know that the intent is to go down and meet Petersburg's new northern boundary, and that, I think, is fairly uncontroversial. But there were other potential expansions, discussion about a meeting with a neighboring community, and I haven't heard anything since. Could we get an update on where those discussions are?
Mr. Keel, The last I left it, Mr. Cheney had reached out several times to Angoon about a possible meeting and had been unsuccessful finding a time and date for that. And so I think we ought to try again and report back to the Assembly at the next meeting on the prospects for a meeting with Angoon and whether we're able to get that scheduled.
Thank you. I vaguely recall there was discussion maybe at this table at committee. I apologize. I'm not on top of my game tonight, but there was discussion about sending a delegation of elected officials, which I think is the most appropriate way for us to have those discussions with neighboring communities, not at a staff level, but with assembly members or mayors.
And just to refresh everyone's memory, I believe the mayor, Ms. White, and Mr. Gregory had signed on. And we've just been unable to schedule a time.
Okay. Thank you. I'm sorry.
They turned us down.
Covered that. My last question this evening, my email has lit up pretty well, and we had a number of folks speak with us tonight about the potential sale of the second and Franklin lot. And I think we're awash in rumor, and it would be helpful to have a better understanding of where things stand, especially with regard to, I keep reading in my emails about the need for an exception of some kind to the fire code. That puts my hair standing up. And then this proposal for, I think, 130 units that we've heard discussed tonight, that causes me significant concern based on the Assembly's discussion when the ordinance to sell the lot came up. Could we get a little more information on where that stands?
Mr. Mayor, I was thinking an update at Lands Committee for more detail, but I'll give a brief one here as well. I think we received lots of questions and information because people believe that the closing date in the purchase and sale agreement, which is tomorrow, was going to be the date of the execution of the sale. The developer has no interest in executing the sale, but what they are interested in is extending that date for a period of 9 months, and the purchase and sale agreement provides for that extension, and I think that's in everybody's best interests. They are making significant efforts to develop concepts and ideas, and their first idea, which they brought forward to a pre-application conference with the Community Development Department, which is not the same as an application for permits or use permits. That's the one that has caught the public's attention, and I think it's important that we do a better job of explaining to the public that that is not an application and that is not a final proposal. So I think we have a couple things happening. One, an extension of the purchase and sale agreement. Two, there are some details that I think the Assembly would be interested in. I think the Lands Committee is the best format for that. And three, an effort to get good information out to the public.
Thank you. I appreciate that. When we pass the ordinance that enabled the sale to go forward, there was an additional condition added by the Assembly. It was unanimous, and that it was that it be developed according to the proposal that we'd all seen. And so I think that's very, very important. Before the sale actually gets signed, developer, the potential buyer, is held to that condition, which is a condition we placed on the sale. So, that's all for me tonight. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Ms. Becker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just a few things that I was fortunate enough to do. I went to the totem pole, the Akbe totem pole dedication, and gave a few words on your behalf. I hope you liked it okay. So, anyway, it was fun. Lots of great people. A lot of my ex-students. I got escorted. I mean, nice kids. They grew up well. Anyway, that was fun. I got to attend two of the Coast Guard Cutter Bailey Barco events. One was a dinner the night before the commissioning ceremony at the Baranoff. Very good. Very nice people. I think that I got to go mainly because of my husband, because of the United Fisheries. He got a plaque. So I got to be there, and I was glad I did. Although I was introduced as the only representative of the city. So where were all of you anyway? Yeah, it's kind of a nice event. And then I attended the commissioning ceremony, as many of you did, which I thought was very interesting. I'd never been to one before, and it was just really nice. Docks and Harbors has talked a little bit about this Uber. What's the name of that?
Uber.
Insofar as finding places for them to park, finding places for them to do pickup, and trying to find some way to charge them something. I don't know how well that's going, but we'll find out more, I'm sure. And then I had a question for Mr. Jones. The art that was being talked about, was that at Downtown Business Association? The only question I have about that, and I think I asked it before at DIG, because it came up at DIG too, was the Historical Commission and the standards of downtown as far as the Historical Commission, and whether or not they've been contacted, and if it goes anywhere, they really start to think that they can put any kind of art they want to go to do, then maybe there should be some coordination between the commission and that, if that's something that should be done. The only art I can think of downtown that's large, both of them are historical. They're not any kind of mod kind of, I don't know what the artwork is what they're looking at. But at any rate, I think the Historical Commission should be involved in any kind of artwork that goes downtown. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Becker.
Mr. Mayor, if I might. Mm-hmm. That was part of the discussion. Some of the criticism from local artists was if you get somebody from outside, it probably won't be historic. But I think like the sign ordinance and some other things, historic district isn't all of downtown. And I know for signs, if you're facing toward, if you're on South Franklin and you're looking at a sign, that sign must be meet historic standards. If you're looking at a sign from the water and that side of the building that faces the ocean, they don't have to meet the historic standards for signs. So, and I'm not, there are some ordinances related to murals and where they can be and how they can be, and all of that would need to be discussed. And the DBA is aware of that, but not necessarily discussing that far yet. They really aren't sure what it is they might want to recommend to others.
All right, that concludes assembly comments and questions. We have no one signed up for public participation on non-agenda items. So do you guys want to sign up, please? You want to take that back there?
You can sign up right at the desk. How about that?
One stop shopping.
Oh, yeah. So we can do it after the meeting. Don't forget. Yeah, I won't be if you want this one. We didn't say it must tell me by June 3rd, so I'm going to tell you because we have to tell them when we tell them.
Well, maybe we'll have to redo it and figure out another time.
Yes.
To catch up.
Okay, Mr. Quayle.
That's Kelly. What is water related? I had an observation.
If you would
William Quayle, 415 Willoughby, number 305. Ever since in the last couple of weeks, I've been noticing there's a lot less taxis that if you want to get impromptu, you know, if you're a tourist and you want to get a taxi, it's a lot harder. You gotta make a pre-arrangement for a taxi ever since the Uber started. And I noticed that when it comes to the people and that they're a lot more desperate from getting a ride from me. And I can't do it, of course. I got to turn them down, but I noticed that that's since Uber started, okay? And it's something to be... Also, when it comes to the Paris thing, I'm totally against it. Juneau has so many trees, we don't need to be told that all different kinds of things from outside, okay? We don't need that, all right? Our trees produce so much oxygen, it would take tremendous amount of CO2 to get it. So we have global warming in that. In fact, if we had a volcano cloud of at least 40% CO2, Juneau could process it because we have so many trees. So I've studied geology for 5 semesters. So I hear this stuff about the crying people about global warming and that. Other places, yes, if you don't cut our trees. That's all I can say, don't cut our trees. And when it comes to other places, I tell them to go plant trees. So if you get anything from anybody else, and it's going through these meetings and that, you tell them go plant trees.
Thank you, Mr. Quayle.
Yeah.
Mr. Watson?
Dennis Watson, 9333 Northland Street. Thanks for letting me make a couple of comments here. One that caught my attention tonight was reference to the comp plan. And I think there's probably one person in this room besides myself that worked on the comp plan. And I remember how tedious it was and how long it took and much discussion about making sure that we kept on track so that the comp plan wouldn't linger as or languish like it did prior to the 2013 comp plan. And I've heard no comments. I've heard nothing from community development on a plan on when they're going to get started. And yet tonight you all are dealing with some topical issues on overlays. That's just one of the many things that the comp plan could address. There was much complaints from the community for those of us who were around, some of the assembly members. I think maybe Mr. Keel was there, Mr. Jones, about the comp plan, and yet nothing has been done since. It's overdue to be done. I don't want to quote the timeline on it, but I know it's overdue. And the discussion of having staff work on the comp plan came up at the commission level, and it's not a good idea to have staff work on a comp plan. We had staff turnover. It lengthened the amount of time that it took for us to get our work done, and it wasn't the best use of staff. A lot of discussion about having that contracted out, or at least basically the work that can be done. The finite things definitely needs to be worked on with staff, but it took far too long to get it done, and it became very controversial at times. And I think the time is overdue to get the comp plan started again, because every planning commission meeting, there's a reference to the comp plan. Decisions are made on the comp plan. There's even decisions made. Well, I'm going to keep talking, so I'll leave that alone. The last thing I want to comment on is the recognition that the assembly paid a young man tonight who became a citizen And speaking from some experience getting the kind of support that I got from our delegation in Washington, D.C., and the governor, it paled in comparison to what you all did tonight. And I really admire all of you for what you did in recognizing that young man. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Ross. Ms. Becker.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move we recess into executive session to discuss a matter that by law, charter, or ordinance is required to be confidential. The topic to be discussed is CLIA litigation update.
And this, Madam Attorney, is not going to be too long?
No.
So we probably should just turn this off in the back and have our meeting.
I think it will take between 10 and 15 minutes as long as you all don't have many questions or direction.
Oh, yeah. What are the odds?
Now he's going to give us that look. He's going to give us that school teacher look.
No, I was just amazed when you said that, you know, you look at an agenda and go, okay, well, that's not going to take us very long.
Yep.
Wrong.
We need to ask if the public defense.
Pardon? We need to ask.
Hi, Jen.
Yeah, is there any objection from the public?
Checking.
Seeing none, we are in executive session. Larry, if you would just wait out.
This is KTOO Juno. You've been listening to the assembly meeting for the city and borough of Juno. They've now gone into closed-door executive session. It's 52 degrees with light drizzle and fog mist at the airport. Tonight's forecast calls for scattered showers, cloudy skies, lows around 47. Scattered showers for tomorrow with a chance of sun, highs around 60, with increasing clouds overnight with lows around 46. And looks like Wednesday and Thursday, there's also some rain in the forecast. Highs hovering in the 60s, overnight lows in the 40s. And catch the last 2 minutes of Democracy Now! Thanks for tuning in to our live political coverage.
An environment of police brutality. And so what we want to do is be ahead of the curve in the city of Jackson. We want to see...
We're going to have to leave it there. I thank you so much, and we'll cover your...